Welcome to Finding the Faith with me, your host, Frida Donnelly, where we explore what matters. Whether it's traversing someone's faith journey, diving deeper into doctrine, or simply enjoying Christian fellowship, I aim to focus on the good and the beautiful to provide you with some respite from the world. If you'd like to join us live, check out Finding the Faith on Rumble every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. All the links are in the show notes down below. Please remember to rate and subscribe, and I'll see you on the other side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Finding the Faith, where you come to explore what matters every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. I do apologize that the pre-video, for some weird reason, had some tech glitches. We will try to get those fixed next time. It was perfectly fine last time, so I'm not quite sure what happened, but we'll have our producers look into it. I'm kidding. It's me and my husband. We're the producers. And Jax, he's the audio producer, because we also have an audio podcast. So thank you so much for coming and spending time with us. Tonight, I am so grateful to have my friend Allie with us. How are you doing, Allie?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's always a pleasure. So getting right into it, what are your first memories of religion?
My first memories of religion, probably being around our Presbyterian church growing up. That was where we spent a lot of our time, even outside of Sundays. My sister and I used to play music there, and it was kind of just like our default place when we weren't at school or home.
Oh, I love that so much. That sounds so wonderful. So how would you describe your spiritual journey? Because you went from Presbyterian to becoming Anglican. Did you make any stops during the way, or how did that turn out?
I guess I don't really consider it a conversion. Honestly, just I think, especially kind of between major faith traditions, I hear a lot of friends saying they converted. I genuinely don't feel that way at all. I still will absolutely attend like PCA churches. I kind of the whole gamut. I grew up with a Roman Catholic dad and a Presbyterian mom. Our church went PCUSA for those for whom that matters. Kind of after the split. So when I was in middle school or high school, roughly, and kind of along the way have attended lots of different churches, depending on where I'm living at the time. PCA churches aren't particularly common, depending on where you are, and kind of have ended up at non-denoms. And I was recommended a wonderful church when I went to DC, when I moved there, two-ish years ago, that was an Anglican church, which was totally new to me. I mean, I think my understanding of it was, oh, they're like Episcopalian or something. Mm-hmm. Church of England, I mean, you know what a lot of folks, I think, typically associate with Anglicanism. And for me, it was just a really lovely, I don't want to say combination, but sort of central way is what Anglicans mm-hmm. would tend to describe it as between Protestantism and Catholicism, or at least Rome's idea of Catholicism. So for me, it was kind of a nice melding. I got confirmed in high school, like a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And that was very much where I chose between Roman Catholic and otherwise. And my parents were pretty chill about me going one way or the other. I had attended both growing up, so I was mm-hmm. pretty immersed in both traditions, but kind of made that choice in high school. And Anglicanism, honestly, for me, felt like home in a lot of different ways. So I've stuck in an ACNA church since for probably the past 2 years.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's one of those things I've had, you know, guests that run the gamut because of the fact that obviously this is a show for Christians. You don't have to be one particular denomination. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Protestant. It's like one of those, you know, obviously you watched it. But yeah, that's one of the things where it's like there's one group that's like, oh, I converted to this. And then there's another group that's like, oh, no, it's just, you know, that's where my spiritual journey led me. That's where God led me. And I always find that really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think the conversion makes sense for a lot of folks, mm-hmm. especially if you're converting, for instance, to Catholicism or something that doesn't necessarily recognize some of the sacraments or, you know, checkpoints along the way for other things, certainly to Eastern Orthodoxy or things like that. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple friends convert to Christianity in general, which has been such a blessing to kind of be there for that journey. But I don't know. I mean, personally, like my family is from Minnesota. They're a lot of Norwegians. So they were Lutherans when they were in Minnesota. And by the time they got to Buffalo, there weren't a ton of Lutheran churches. So they were Presbyterian because it was kind of the closest thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
If anything, you know, it's like this apostolic succession of my own family and just what's the closest-ish thing to Lutheranism you can get.
That makes a lot of sense because right now my husband and I, we've been trying to find, we're kind of waiting until Pride Month to be like, okay, so that, it was his idea and he honestly, he's brilliant. That's part of why I married him. But he'll go, okay, so these churches over here all have Pride flags and that's not, you know, what we're looking for. So let's try to find the ones that don't have Pride flags and then let's like take the data and like wind it down. And we've been trying to find an Anglican church, and that's where the meme that y'all might have either seen on Instagram or on Twitter, either way I'm at She's Based Babe, kind of came into the picture, because I was like, okay, no, I'm not looking for Episcopalian, I'm looking for Anglican.
Well, it's interesting because I mean Anglican, there's kind of like Catholicism. And I know a lot of people don't like this. A lot of people claim the term Catholic. A lot of people claim the term Anglican. And so it can refer both to the Church of England, and it can refer to, you know, people who are more what you would think of as Episcopalians. And it can also refer to kind of other, what those people might refer to as offshoots, which is kind of the church I attend, Anglican Church of North America. It's kind of become a class of churches, and I'm sure anyone who's like super into theology or church politics is probably losing their minds with me right now. But the long and the short of it is that just as you might say, Anglicans will say I'm an English Catholic, they might refer to Orthodox as Eastern Catholics. There are different types of Anglicans as well. And so I think if you're specifically like searching for a church that is, you know, it checks off, like it arrives at some of the same conclusions that you have. Kind of finding the right strain is really, really crucial because Anglican can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And putting that in the Google search bar is going to be a lot less precise than kind of, I think, like just figuring out what specific, I don't even want to say denomination, but kind of you want within that.
That makes a lot of sense because I'll be honest, I was on Google last night. I was like, okay, like let's try to find this because my friend has been sharing with us. She's also an Anglican. Sarah, she's been on the show before. You guys might remember her. She is also an Anglican and she's been like sharing with us the video live stream from her church, but we're like, okay, we're looking for a community like in person. So it's definitely been one of those things. I would also like to say hi to some of our friends in the chat tonight. Hey, Evie. Hey, other Kyle. We mean this with love. It's not, you know. But Kyle, my husband, is the original Kyle. Hey, Brendan. It's so good to see all of you. Thank you for coming in. Make sure if you are watching this, either live or after the fact, that you hit that like button and the subscribe button so you can keep coming back to explore what matters. So anyways, jumping back into the conversation, what are some of the challenges or doubts that you faced in your faith journey and how have you navigated through them?
I think growing up in, especially with our Presbyterian church, and this is just happened to be the church that I went to, it was very, very service-based and was not really focused on, I think, like learning and in internalizing the theology very much.
Yeah.
And so it kind of brought me to a place, at least towards the end of high school, where I viewed faith as like, this is a nice to have because of the things that it gives us. I like the fact that it gives me a community and that's all well and good. But it doesn't really matter beyond that, or like whether or not Noah's Ark is real doesn't matter. Or like, you know, the minutiae of the Bible don't really matter to me. It's kind of where I was entering college. And then I went to a Presbyterian college for undergrad and was kind of the same way, especially kind of being surrounded by something. It's like you forget that, like fish forget this is water. You don't really think about it. And so it wasn't until I moved to Germany for a while and I lived in Western Germany, which was slightly, I guess, closer to what I grew up with. And then I moved to Berlin. And living in Berlin was a very quick immersion into secular culture super, super quickly. Which I think was super challenging at first because I started going, hey, whoa, I thought we were all on the same page here. But I had really grown up in a super religious bubble by comparison. And certainly in college, I mean, this was after my sophomore year of college. I kind of dropped out for a little while, moved there. So it was complete night and day between understanding that everyone has grown up with the same values and really taking them for granted. And I was working in Berlin and I was doing a lot of like refugee resettlement work at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was with basically either atheist Germans or Muslim refugees from various countries.
Wow.
And I think kind of those arguments and going, wait, we don't all believe this, highlighted for me the fact that I had just taken a lot of it for granted.
That's amazing. What was it like living in Germany? Like, and did it sounds like working with those, like, I want more.
Yeah, it was really cool. Actually, one of the moments that I think clicked the most for me, very sweet guy that I'd worked with. I was teaching German at the time, so I was one of my students, actually.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he had invited me over for, he said Shabbat, and it was really difficult because he doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
He's speaking to me in German, but I'm teaching him German, so I know his German not that good. And I'm looking at this guy who's from Syria, and I'm like, you can't mean Shabbat. Maybe I've just like Googled the country wrong, but like, I don't think you're Jewish.
You know.
And so I show up at this apartment, and I'm just knocking on the door. It does not have his last name on the door. I'm like, all right, this is super weird.
Yeah.
And these Orthodox Jews open the door. And I was like, hi, I think I'm totally at the wrong place. Mm. And they go, no, you're here for Shabbat. I was like, I am, but I don't know. And they said, oh, he like stepped out. He didn't know that you were actually coming. Like that had all gotten lost in translation. And so I end up just going to Shabbat with these Orthodox Jews. He ends up showing up halfway through. So we've got like a Muslim, Christian, atheist, Jewish Shabbat. Like we're covering all our bases.
That's incredible.
And it was weird because one of the other, like, he was a German Muslim guy, had asked me, he's like, oh, I thought Christians had a Sabbath too. And I was like, oh, we do, but like, we don't take it that seriously. And I kind of caught myself and went, I don't take it that seriously. That doesn't mean we shouldn't. And that doesn't mean that other Christians aren't doing this properly.
Yeah.
And so it was a huge wake up call, just kind of being confronted with what it looks like to take your faith seriously. Now, obviously, I don't believe a lot of the things that my hosts at that Sabbath dinner believed, but it was really refreshing to kind of understand that that's what taking it seriously could look like. Even just as far
Absolutely.
As dinner, I don't know, inviting people to your Sabbath table, I think is really, really beautiful. And something I hope to emulate from those friends.
That's amazing. I really love that. I have had the great privilege of working for some amazing, amazing families. And one of them, they were actually a couple of them, but one of them in particular was Jewish. And the way that they structured my schedule, the way that they structured their schedule as like really powerful, like high powered, like people with like high powered jobs who are like entrepreneurs who like ran like a cybersecurity firm and like all of this stuff. And the way their kids' activities and everything just like fell into line so with like so granularly so that they could make sure this was time carved out for their family was so beautiful and such a testament to their faith and kind of like faith in general that it was one of the things that really made me start looking at my own self. And I was like, okay, like y'all have this, like what, I don't have anything. I need to have something. And so that's kind of a little bit when my brain started to be like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the difference between kind of putting your faith first and putting your faith last. I think a lot of American Christians are used to kind of doing church when you have nothing else to do, which is where we see things like travel sports and, you know, Sunday brunch kind of encroaching on that because it's like, oh, well, I would go to church, but I have brunch. When a lot of other faith traditions would be like, oh, I would go to brunch, but I have church.
Exactly.
Which I think is... it's one of those things that's so intuitive, you completely forget that it exists in the first place, and we get really lazy with it. So I think kind of that, you know, cross-faith ecumenism, if you will, is really helpful in that regard.
I can definitely see that. Now, this was before you attended Ivy League, right?
Yes. So kind of that was middle through college, and then went back, finished a little early, and went pretty much straight to Harvard.
Okay, I didn't want to dox your...
No, you're fine. It's behind me, I guess, so whatever. But
yeah, you went to college in my neck of the woods. So how did going there, you know, affect your faith?
Honestly, it was, I wouldn't say that most of the school is particularly religious, but kind of in contrast to going to a Christian college, it wasn't like a Hillsdale type undergrad. I mean, it was like nominally Christian, I suppose. So very few people I knew went to church. Mm-hmm. I did infrequently, kind of, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
Not nearly as much as I should have. Because again, like, we're all surrounded by Presbyterians, who cares? But I think at Harvard, it was really interesting. One, because I had a lot of friends convert to Christianity, or several friends convert to Christianity in general, who had like never known Christ before, which is just, whoa. I mean, I didn't realize that you could grow up that way at all. And it was really beautiful just kind of seeing what it looks like to go from zero to 100. And two, because the campus in general was, I won't say like hostile to faith. I didn't find it that way at all. But like certainly lacking it in general, it felt like another Berlin, honestly, where you ended up with like these like really great pockets of folks. We had kind of our like Christian fellowship Bible study that was really tight knit. I ended up kind of with a core group of friends who, a lot of whom were like really rad trad Catholics, who were awesome. And, you know, getting into those debates after a couple. And then I had my kind of small group from church, and I went to like a very, I don't want to say smells and bells, but like the modern smells and bells of
you know,
fog machines and guitars, kind of like non-denom type church, which people hate on because I think it's like what people think of as like Protestantism gone wrong.
Yeah.
But genuinely, I think when that's well catered to, especially a city like Boston with tons of students,
it's
freaking awesome. I mean, where else, genuinely nowhere else, could I have gone to church and immediately gotten plugged into a group of like 20 girls all doing the same thing on Saturday night, like all kind of staying more on the straight and narrow, all my age. I mean, I think that they get a lot of hate because it's easy for meme accounts to dunk on if you want to like go full rad trad and like, whatever, Twitter's going to Twitter. But it was such a blessing. And it had, I think, fantastic teaching on most things. It was not kind of fluffy theology by any means. It was wonderful and it was truly catered to students. So I don't know. I think faith in grad school was a wonderful time for me. I won't say politics in grad school was necessarily the same way. That was
pretty tough. Oh, for sure.
But I think where there's isolation, you find community. And I think Christians are very, very good at that. It's something where people's Christian faith kind of thrives in exile in certain ways. Not to, you know, sound
but that's
totally too whiny about it, but like really.
It's totally true. And I think like when you find like, because there's some things that you can have in common that are like, oh, okay, cool. Like, good for us. And then there's other things that you can have in common that aren't like, you know, necessarily typical. And that just immediately bonds you because you understand that you have those same values. You have like similar shared experiences and a similar kind of goal.
Yeah.
And that is really, really helpful when it comes to forging friendships.
No, absolutely. I mean, I found it a lot easier to quickly become friends with a lot of the people that I knew that I had shared faith with, mostly because you kind of already have a language in common for talking about the deeper stuff. You'd have to do a lot less feeling out of, okay, what are these person's values? And like, what are the landmines I might step on? I mean, you already have a script for how to relate to that person. And it's like, how can I pray for you? I mean, getting to small group, and I thought this was huge, kind of coming from like the grad school, you know, the duck problem, everyone seems fine on the surface and everyone is absolutely losing it underneath the surface.
Yeah.
Like I had never been in that sort of academic environment before, for sure. And then going to small group and like really starting things off with, all right, what went wrong in your week this week? What went well? And like, how's your faith going? But like, also, how can we all pray for you? I think was just such a cultural difference. And I noticed that even with people who weren't at that church, that it was just so much easier to kind of like immediately take the mask off and go, all right, like we're fighting the same battle. What are your demons, kind of thing?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Is there anything that you would appreciate our audience praying for you? Because I know that we have so many prayer warriors, both in the chat and in our Discord.
None, I guess, live stream worthy, but general prayer is always lovely.
Yes, for sure. And y'all know that I had an important meeting today, so thank you so much for praying for that. So are there any other religious kind of topics that you want to touch on, or do you want to get into the red pill talk now?
Kind of up to you. I mean, if you feel things are wrapped up, I'm happy to move on.
Okay. So what is the red pill movement? Do we have a working definition? As Jamie brought up on Twitter, they're kind of a group to have that no true Scotsman problem. And it's like, okay, is this?
Yeah. And I think first off, one of the things that they will constantly say is this is not a movement, which I think is generally true. I mean, I kind of use that terminology because I think if the shoe fits, like, it's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think they will say we're not a movement to kind of avoid responsibility for where things are going. I will say they're not a movement because I don't think they have a goal necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I would consider Red Pill, they consider themselves to be an understanding of how humans operate. The praxeology is what they refer to it as, which was popularized by this guy, Rolla Tomasi, who has blocked me basically since my first day on Twitter, which I consider a badge of honor at this point.
Just to pause real quick, because I know I read it and I've been like talking about it a bit. That's the one that Andrea Mew had.
Yeah.
She had interviewed him, right?
I think she had interviewed him and she was on a podcast with him at one point. She said he's a lot nicer in person than he is online. So I think, like many people, it's kind of more of an act.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's what gets the views up. He was also like beefing with Pearl a couple of days ago, which was wild. I was like, friendly fire. But
I was
80% overlapping talking points.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe that's why the friendly fire. But in general, it's considered an understanding of how the sexes work and how they relate to one another. Ultimately, though, it's an extremely pessimistic view of human nature, of intersexual dynamics. And the premise is effectively that we are at war with one another. It takes as like boilerplate understanding of male and female nature that we are like fundamentally antagonistic towards one another, and that it's a zero sum game, kind of the game of like romance and gender relations in general, which is fascinating because I think it is one of the only understandings of male and female nature that doesn't see them as complementary, but sees them as like there can only be one.
Yes, exactly. That absolutely is something that totally stands out about them. Now, what is there anything that specifically first drew you to explore all of this? Because I love your Twitter. Anyone who knows me, like, IRL knows that I'm, like, low-key obsessed with your Twitter. Not in a creepy way, I promise, because we're friends. But you always have, like, the best takes. Y'all need to go follow her at Cluffalo if you don't already, because amazing. Chef's kiss. You probably see me, like, retweeting always in your replies. But is there anything specifically that brought you to kind of, like, talking about this more?
So it's kind of been something that I feel like I don't want to say like followed since the beginning, but, certainly in like more high school, early college, I was on Reddit a lot and the incel thing was a thing back then. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say that I really got like re-exposed to much of it until I started writing for, EV Magazine and like being on Twitter. I made the Twitter account initially to promote my writing, which is, I don't think it really worked particularly well for that. It's kind of taken off. It's kind of, you know, taken on a life of its own, honestly, in the past like 3 or 4 months.
You've even been mentioned on Brett Cooper at least once.
Which is right? So nice. She's the sweetest. But yeah, I mean, I think I ended up kind of noticing it more and more because I love relationship topics and I love talking about love. And kind of just that sphere of things. And it was like this weird thing where you're talking at a party and like this guy comes out of the corner and is like, I lost something once. And like, all right. That was weird. Whatever. We'll keep talking. And then he just keeps going. Like, love is impossible. Everyone gets divorced. Yes. And you're like, can you calm down for like 2 seconds?
I'm like picturing that meme in my head, right?
Yeah, it is that. It's like that's what Red Pill is. It's like no one else can be happy because I'm unhappy. But I think I also started noticing it. I have a lot of dude friends. I love my dude friends.
Yeah,
they're wonderful. Amen. Occasionally, what you'll notice with dude friends is they are also online. Yes. And that we are often on different parts of the internet. And what I started realizing is that they would kind of, and like guy friends from like separate friend groups where I'm going, okay, you didn't hear this from him, would come up with the same sort of talking points about like women are into hypergamy and like they're just trying to, you know, F their way up the chain. And I remember going, wait, so-and-so said the exact same thing last week. And you guys don't talk. Like, you guys must be listening to the same voices. And then lo and behold, I get on Twitter tweeting about, you know, hair loss and random EV articles and egg donation and random things. And these guys start popping up. Not my friends, although some of them are some of the Anons that I talk with on Twitter, which is funny, which is why I'm so nice to all of them, because I never know which ones are which.
Makes sense.
But I the talking points started kind of rearing their ugly head again and going, I lost something once. And I started realizing, oh my goodness, like this is kind of an undercurrent for a lot of the dudes around. I know that a lot of people will say like, oh, Red Pill is just kind of this niche community. It's honestly not. I think I've heard from friends who teach high school, friends who teach middle school, that this is something that's becoming very, very prominent with even their teenage boys. And I think especially before they have a chance to even have positive experiences with women, they're being kind of, you know, talked down to in their own way from people who've had negative experiences and really, really scared out of ever having positive ones.
Yeah, it's really, really sad.
And so it wasn't intentional, but kind of stumbled.
That's really interesting. Also, super random question, but question from the chat, only if you're comfortable, because I know better than to ask this, but are you 11-teen? And if not, do you feel comfortable sharing roughly your age with the chat?
Oh, 11-teen. Oh, my age. Yeah, I'm 27. Okay. I have been called, I've been told that I look like I'm a freaking teenager, which is also funny because I don't think I do at all, at least. Maybe the ring light isn't showing some of the lines. And then I constantly get people who are like, you're middle-aged, which is half trolls, but I act like I genuinely get like well-intentioned, nice people who think that like I'm middle-aged or like you're an empty nester. You don't know what you're talking about. And I had to tell somebody, they were like, when was the last time you set foot on a college campus? I was like, 2 years ago, bro. Like when I graduated. So I don't know. I don't say this as like, you know, to be self-disparaging or anything. I think I just have like a funky looking face from certain angles. And that's totally fine. But I'm 27 years old, which I maintain is the most normal age until next year. And then 28 will be the most normal age.
Makes sense. I can see that. The boys are like, oh, okay. I remember being 11-teen. I remember being 11-teen.
Yeah, 11-teen.
Oh, we have a mutual fan in the chat, Melee Brawler.
I love him. He's lovely. Right? I think he... I assume it's he.
There's a lot of been on the show like, before. Yeah.
I'll figure out that it's a guy or I'll figure out that it's a girl. Mm-hmm. There's one that has kind of like a flower emoji and said something about like, oh, my wife and kids. I'm like, you're a dude.
Yeah.
Fascinating. But Melee Brawler, that's male coded. So I guess we're good. But shout out. You rock.
Yeah. He's awesome. He's such a sweetheart.
Very much so.
Yes. Okay, before his, you know, head gets so big that his little red cap doesn't fit. but yeah, so, and honestly, like, I feel like there's a specific type of face that's, like, very, like, supermodel coded almost, where it's, like, it's gorgeous, but it's also unique in its own, like, handcrafted by God kind of way.
I think, the lady who used to run America's Next Top Model, I think she called it ugly pretty or pretty ugly. I think ugly pretty, where she's like most people, like other women would probably find you ugly, but like it's distinctive. So I'll claim that. Sure. I feel ugly pretty.
But yeah, because I think you're young, obviously, because, you know, we're roughly the same age. But also I don't know someone who I've never met IRL who I've agreed with that much. And then you just drop your latest take and I'm like, what?
I appreciate it.
With the exception of like waffles and pancakes.
Yeah, the food ones, I kind of felt like culling people at that point. I'm like, I'm gonna see who actually likes me, because I know I have horrible taste in food. But I stick by it, you know, I'm loyal.
Exactly, and that's an important quality. In chat, hold on. Oh, okay. sorry, boys being boys. So can you kind of explain what the red pill like diaspora ideology kind of vibes kind of advocate for? I know there's not like a specific like goal, but what kind of the consensus is there?
Kind of the idea is like you get yours. It's primarily aimed at men. Although I think there are women who could probably get sucked into it. I think they're probably less likely to, frankly. Mostly because I would say that central to their idea is it's kind of like a mirror image of feminism. Feminism tends to see there being like a structural hold on society that women have, or that men have rather, the patriarchy. Red pill doesn't like to see themselves as male feminism, but it very much is that they'll call it like the gynocracy, or you'll hear longhouse. And while I think those like words are super funny when they're used in memes or referring to something specific, if you actually think that girls run the world, I can't take you seriously. It just doesn't make any, like, I promise we do not have like underground tunnels through the CIA and we're actually like, no, make it more feminist. I will be the first to admit that I do think that a lot of our institutions have gone fairly feminist. I think that's fair and normal to say.
It is.
But kind of seeing women as like cultural victors, I don't think is necessarily fair. I think that men and women have kind of taken hold of different parts of society and there's a weird tension occurring that's not ideal, but I don't think anyone's won yet. Otherwise it wouldn't be, you know, a gender war.
Exactly.
But I would say in general that they advocate for very little agency. I think a lot of the idea is, and this is, I think, more of a cope, but they'll say, okay, women aren't going to talk to you when you're in your teens. They're not going to talk to you when you're in your 20s, or if they do, the odds of it working out are really poor. You need to get leverage in this situation. And it's kind of game theory, right? It's like, here's some game, like get the leverage when you're older, when you're in your 30s, go marry an 18-year-old because we have to maximize for fertility. And 18-year-olds are famously, you know, fertile and whatnot. Super creepy.
How many of them do you think are just like massive Leonardo DiCaprio fans where they have like his poster with like little heart emojis like all around it on their walls?
Yeah, so
like no other furniture.
the name that she goes by on Twitter, it says Cersei. I'm forgetting like what the actual handle is. But she posted today, she was like Sex in the City, Carrie Bradshaw is for girls what Leonardo DiCaprio is for boys. Like, if you really think that that multi-year situationship is ever going to marry you, like, you're delusional. And but same with the Leonardo DiCaprio thing. Like, I completely will agree that you can repeatedly get 18-year-old girls if you're Leonardo DiCaprio. Most dudes aren't. I also don't think, and this is really where it comes down to it, is I don't think that you should want to in either situation. I don't think you should want to marry a situationship who strung you along for 5 years. That's stupid. And I don't think that you should want to just continually get the youngest women that you can for its own sake. I have seen plenty of guys say on Twitter that they've, you know, dated a lot younger and you just don't have much to talk about. Ultimately, I think that the idea is to have the most stable marriages possible. I think Red Pill thinks that you achieve that by having the upper hand somehow of, like, you know, being a passport bro and like going and getting a girl that can't leave you because she doesn't have the money to, or she'll just be grateful that you're doing the bare minimum for her. Or finding a really young woman who, you know, she's not tainted by others. Like she's never slept with anyone else. So she can't possibly, you know, ever have known someone else.
Which is like, it's such a cope because like outside of like the virginity aspect of things.
Sure.
Like the guys, you know, not being sullied by any other guys. It's like, okay, so not ever having a guy treat you properly, have a healthier relationship or a lot like, when it comes to like the 25-year-olds like hitting the wall aspect of things with like being young women, it's like, okay, not having your brain fully formed and like all of your neurons like fully connected and adapted and all the, you know, that aspect of things. And it's like, that's such a cope. Like, don't you want somebody who to a degree has like maybe had like had a couple of relationships or whatever, and then been like, no, you know what? Like, yes, those didn't work out, but you're literally the love of my life. I want you. And I wake up and I choose you every single day.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it kind of both ways. I know a lot of people who genuinely, like, met somebody that they loved off the bat in high school or college. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome, too.
Oh, for sure.
I think there's kind of, not that I usually talk about this, but mm-hmm. there's, like, a kind of a feminist counter that's, like, your 20s are for finding yourself and you have to date around and see who you like and see who you don't. I really don't buy into that at all.
Yeah, no.
I tend to think in general, like, the fewer relationships that you can have, the fewer heartbreaks that you can have, especially as a woman, the better.
Absolutely.
And certainly I think, like, I won't say that, like, you should keep your body count low so that you don't pair bond with other people. But, like, actually though, I mean, genuinely,
literally,
net negative for men and women.
Yes.
But especially I think emotionally for women, to sleep with people that you're not going to marry. Like,
absolutely.
That I think everyone should be able to say. But this idea that, like, it's a magic, I don't know if you've ever seen Diary of a Wimpy Kid, they have, like, the cheese touch.
I've heard, like, of that a lot because I, like, was, you know, a nanny and everything.
Yeah.
I don't entirely know what that means.
There's, like, it's just a stupid, like, what, 9 years old on the playground, and there's, like, a moldy piece of cheese, and they touch the cheese touch, or they touch the cheese, and, like, so-and-so has the cheese touch until he gives it away. No one wants to touch it. It's like cooties, basically.
Oh, okay.
I think there's, like, this... Red Pill has kind of secularized the idea of purity or the idea of virginity into the cheese touch, where it's basically just cooties and a woman is forever tainted. But, like, only women can get the cheese touch, and this doesn't apply to men. And I think
kind of like how Rory Gilmore has to buy her next a sweater.
I think so. I've never actually seen Gilmore Girls. So I'm sorry. We're talking past each other reference-wise.
Sorry.
But, no, I mean, I think that the idea of, like, this cooties thing, they'll try and base it in science, and they'll say, well, like, there's pair bonding. First of all, I have not seen any good arguments for saying that pair bonding occurs in humans, or if it does, that it only occurs in women. That's not what the word pair means.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if it did, that happens to men too. We'll see a lot of citing of the fact that, you know, higher numbers of sexual partners before marriage has a net negative effect on your marriage, and the stability of it, the likelihood of divorce, et cetera, which I think is, again, accurate and fair. What they tend to crop out of the graph is the fact that it also occurs for men too. Like, they're
exactly.
basically parallel lines as far as, like, number of partners. So I think if we're going to be on the purity train, I am here for it. I am here for telling everyone to be abstinent. What I'm not here for telling people, and I think this kind of gets into the religious idea of purity culture, which is why I'm saying that they're secularizing it,
yes.
is the fact that, like, there is zero redemption from the cheese touch. There is zero redemption from, like, hitting 25, hitting 30, whatever number they have on their minds that day. Zero redemption from no longer being a virgin. If you're a woman, if you're a man, then it never mattered in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think these ideas are equally as harmful when they're coming from religious sources. I mean, I think that abstinence is awesome. I think that chastity is certainly a virtue. But where I think a lot of churches went wrong with, like, the purity rings and things like that, is you had a lot of girls thinking that, well, once you've lost your virginity, or once you've, like, lost that ring, or the Nick Jonas ring, or whatever everyone had, like, you're irredeemable and you might as well, like, be for the streets anyway. Which I think is a really damaging idea within a church community.
Absolutely.
Even more depressing outside of it, because it's not even like you could be forgiven for your sin. I had tweeted once, which I think is where we ended up connecting, that, like, the Red Pill sees no vision of redemption, because it's ultimately just, like, a secularized movement. Again, we can't call it a movement. They'll yell at me for it, but it is. And I think when you fully secularize something, what you lose is grace and what you lose is redemption. And they see neither of those as possible for women who have not basically gotten married at the age of 18 and willed themselves completely to a man.
Absolutely. That is such a good point. I would like for the audio listeners to hear some of these really funny comments. So... one of them says, which this is not a scientific medical advice, blah, 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 podcast disclaimer. But according to chat, did you know if you have sex with someone, part of their DNA stays forever? Another interesting comment was, cooties can't hurt me. I wear a mask. Perfect. Another interesting comment was, chastity belts, boys, lock them up. And then the response to the wearing the mask, that is only if you don't use proper protection. But yeah.
So. Fascinating.
Chat is having fun.
Tonight. I see a lot of comments saying that women shouldn't be on the internet. And I'm starting to wonder about men too. Yes. I think we all should just go touch grass.
Absolutely. I love nature. Like, I was trying to think of where my actual favorite place in nature was the other night, just in case, like, they asked or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, because, like, there's, like, the Arboretum in Boston, which is beautiful. And, like, I remember gorgeous. Walking there, like, with my mom and, like, looking up at, like, the statue of my great times 10 grandfather, Paul Revere, which is, like, so cool. And then, like, one of the reasons maybe I'm, like, core memory of loving waffles is that we went to the Grand Canyon and
oh cool
yeah and actually had a like a delicious gorgeous Belgian waffle like at dawn while overlooking the Grand Canyon because we stayed That's at awesome. The resort. And then it's like nature's so beautiful and it's really important to be out in it.
No, I totally agree. I'm hiking the Grand Canyon this fall with some people and we're doing rim to rim. So you go down 8 miles, across 8 miles and up. And we're trying to do it in one day. So
that's amazing. Are you booking a donkey? Just out of curiosity.
No, we're hiking it. Okay. It's at least unless we fail, but we're training pretty hard for it. So we'll see.
I believe in you.
How it goes. Yeah. You like sleep at the top the night before. We're trying to wake up at like 4-ish and then try and zoop. Problem is the last 8 is up and it has to be.
Yeah.
Not ideal. But one of the girls was like, oh, these older ladies from my church did it. How hard could it be? And we're reading up online and it's like, very hard. Okay, cool. What could go wrong? But I guess we'll find out.
Exactly. You're a strong girl. I believe in you. You'll have to come back and tell us how it was. But yeah. We did a couple different things there. One of the things we did was take a helicopter over it. Oh, and wow. I remember both of my guardians, like, faces going absolutely sheet white. Like, I mean, obviously we're white, but, like,
yeah.
Whiter than white. Like, paper white. sorry. When they were like, oh, if the door opens mid-flight, do not lean over the Grand Canyon to close the door. And they were like, what?
Does that happen?
And then, like, as we were taking off, like, the Star Wars, like, soundtrack was, like, playing. It was, like, da da da. Yeah, it was pretty rad. But, yeah, so, like, it's so beautiful. And I cannot wait to hear about that. Now, everybody knows that I'm neurospicy, so I'm just like, over here, over there, let's do it. So in what ways do you see the red pill movement like conflicting with Christian teachings or values?
I think kind of the idea of redemption, someone mentioned in the chat, which I recognize is true, like, what did they say? Redemption doesn't mean being pure again, which is totally true, but that's kind of why the point of purity is, I don't want to say dumb, but like unhelpful as a Christian. God does forgive you. And I think focusing on the fact that a lot of times people don't, or that there is sin in the world that's kind of omnipresent, is really, really damaging to people.
Yeah.
I think that kind of caring about Andrew Tate's opinion over those of, or over that of God is a little dumb. Now I'm not here to say that people can't care about that in a partner. I think that especially, and I hear this actually the most from like virgin women saying like, oh, I also want a male partner who's, you know, boyfriend, husband who's kept himself pure as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's totally understandable to want someone who's, you know, lived the same life that you have. And I don't fault anyone for that. What I fault people for is either A, kind of expecting a level of virtue in a partner that they don't have themselves. I think Absolutely. That's hypocritical and unforgiving. And I find that pretty in conflict with Christian teaching. totally understand having preferences. But especially this kind of idea that we're holding women accountable. And I hear this a lot, is like, women lack accountability. No one holds women accountable. And in a lot of ways, red pillars kind of see themselves as like this, Dexter, that show about the guy that was like killing the serial killers because the cops wouldn't get them. They see themselves as like Dexter for the girls that rejected them in high school. And maybe those women are now 30 and struggling to find someone to marry. Maybe they're not, who cares? Maybe they're like happily married. And these guys still want to attack them online, but they kind of see themselves as like this vigilante justice movement. And I think where that ends up really conflicting with the idea of like God's final justice, is that we're not really called to hold people accountable in those sorts of ways. We're called to, you know, impose justice where it makes sense, especially societally, if, you know, if we're allowed to put people in jail, for instance. But for people who haven't directly harmed you, you're not called to go hold them accountable by telling them that they're whores underneath their Instagram photos. I mean, that's called just bullying, frankly.
Exactly.
And what I think is interesting is that kind of in the same way that a lot of like super rad feminists will consider it holding men accountable when something bad happens to a man and they're like, well, he might not have, but some other like straight white man did. That's how a lot of these people feel about women as a monolith, is like, this pretty woman might not have rejected me, but she rejected someone like me, or someone like her rejected me in high school. I mean, God, I'm a straight white blonde chick. Do you know how many of us there are? There are so many. If I'm counting the fact that none of us has ever rejected a guy online, I'm losing.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to even be something that I've done. So I think that also, like, you're paying for the sins of people that you are completely unconnected to, is also quite incompatible. But ultimately, the idea that like it's up for humans to kind of not just be the ones implementing this accountability, but also judging it for themselves, against oftentimes extremely unchristian standards, like, for instance, the fact that women must be pure, but men don't have to be.
That's so true. And as you were, you know, talking about that, one of the things that kind of came up for me is that it's kind of one of those pay back to Caesar's what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's. But it's also kind of like the reverse of that too, where it's like, let the justice system take care of its job and let God take care of his job, because it's like honestly such a relief that that's not on us to do, because we're imperfect and we get things wrong. We do our best, but you know, we get things wrong. And so that's why it's, and also like, I'm sorry, but if you don't have hobbies, if your hobby is going online and calling a woman a whore, if there's like a guy version of, like, if there's like a woman's version of that, which I know, you know, there is, you wouldn't want to date her. You wouldn't care if she rejected you, because you wouldn't want to date her in the first place. So it's just this absolute lack of accountability while holding others super, like, hyper accountable, that it just sounds exhausting.
It really does. And I think it's, again, like, it's very fine not to want to date these women. You don't have to. No one has to date me. No one has to date you. No one has to date any of these guys calling us mean names online.
Exactly.
That's fine. Like, everybody's allowed to do that. What I don't understand, and what I think honestly ends up pushing a lot of women kind of away from Christian spaces, I won't necessarily say away from the church, because depends on the church, but certainly away from Christian spaces and very much away from conservatism, is the fact that you have like a tightrope to walk. And if any man anywhere doesn't like how you've been walking it, you can get attacked. Or there's kind of no route to grace. One of the things where I think this comes up a lot is you see kind of former porn women, porn stars, I guess. You see like OnlyFans girls coming to Christ. And now I completely believe that there are some examples of that out there that use it for publicity and they are insincere conversions. I get that. At the same time, that's not for me to judge. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to give every single one of them a huge platform to start off with. I don't necessarily even think that's wise, even for people who are not coming from an OnlyFans background. Immature believers should just probably listen for a little while, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
But this idea that you're judging them by a red pill standard rather than a Christian standard, and like, you will always be dirty, you will always be broken. Yeah, as far as like red pill Jesus goes, red pill Jesus doesn't forgive anybody. No. Red pill Jesus sees you as a porn star forever. Actual Jesus has called you to himself and has saved you and redeemed you. That doesn't mean that anyone else has to date you, because you have done those things while here on earth. And that's okay. But I think that there's kind of this belief from a lot of the red pill that like women are yours to judge one way or the other. And that they may be from God, but they're not really a child of God's. They're kind of for your consumption. And that if you don't want to date them, it is worth disposing of them, at least rhetorically, as you wish. And I see this, there's a lovely account, Miss B Converted, a woman who it was in porn forever, converted to Catholicism. Praise God. I have to like cringe every time I go through any of her comments, because all of her replies are just filled with people. And I truly believe that the Holy Spirit must be doing wonderful things in her heart to even allow her to still be on Twitter. I could not in her position.
Yeah, no, she's so classy and so full of like God's spirit and grace in the way she, you know, handles things. And she's always like, oh, this person is like making a big uproar saying all of this. Pray for them.
Yep.
And honestly, her testimony and like even just like the way she's currently walking right now and handling those situations has been so impactful for me.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, it's so beautiful, because I mean, at times, like I'm Irish, okay, and I know that's a cop-out, but like patience and tact used to be things that I struggled with a little bit online. I'm like, no, I'm going to tell you what's what, and this is the way it is. And then I came to Christ, and then, you know, sanctification's a process, and then seeing the way she handles that, things that are so much worse than what people are saying to me, and being like, okay, you know, if she can do this, I can handle things better.
No, definitely. And it's, I don't know, I think that's one reason that we shouldn't kind of discard with new believers in general. I think especially when they can share their testimony and just be living a public walk and kind of showing their sanctification in public, I think it can be really helpful for everyone else around and good reminders. I think that's very different from giving them a platform, especially to do something like teach or instruct. And I really, really, really dislike the number of new believers that seem to think that belief is about posting based memes against other denominations. That is a very weird trend, and I don't know why we started doing that. But I wish we would stop immediately.
Yes, it's so icky. It tears down what we do have in common with, you know, the Christian most Brotherhood. Things. Exactly, exactly.
And it's very tribal, and I get that. But I don't know. I mean, I think that What's frustrating about kind of these two different views of redemption is the fact that people are, you do have to pick one eventually, because they're pretty mutually exclusive.
Yes.
And I hear a lot more about like, no one else will date you than anything else. And they kind of don't want these women to be successful. I'm pretty sure either she or Nala or one of them like actually is already like married and fine.
Yeah.
And that is like the ultimate problem for red pill folks who don't want there to be any redemption and want the world to hold you accountable.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, our sins are not adjudicated here. Sometimes they are, and sometimes, you know, perpetrators are brought to justice, but also like these women didn't actively hurt any of the men who want them brought to justice. So I don't really understand where that comes from, except from this idea that you have been harmed by all women, which is the same idea that women believing that they've been harmed by all men, and therefore that kind of justifies doing things like posting text messages from men online who have just innocently asked you out, or rejecting men in really, really awful ways and recording it, which I've also seen, or just treating men crappily because they're straight, white, or male. Like, I don't understand where that comes from. And I see a lot of it. It's like, well, he must have done something wrong. And it's original sin for the masses, for like the secular understanding of the world. I think original sin, as far as feminists are concerned, is being straight, white, and male. I think original sin for the red pill is kind of female nature, which we'll see everywhere.
Yeah,
it doesn't absolutely matter if you've kept perfectly pure. You could be 18, a virgin, et cetera, everything the red pill wants you to be. You still have female nature. You're still like naturally hypergamous. You're still like naturally flawed. And I think that original sin without a path to redemption and without like grace as a possibility, there's no one to give grace. There's just people to give this amorphous idea of accountability, whatever that means. Like that really is the most depressing way to live, because it's completely absent Christ.
Absolutely. That's so true. And it's so dangerous having grace, like having accountability without grace, because what's the purpose? Like, okay, you messed up, but you can never fix that because screw you. That's why. Like, what?
Yeah.
What's the purpose? But speaking of that, are there like, what are the dangers or pitfalls for Christians who engage with this philosophy?
I think taking it too seriously is one of the main ones. I do think that it's important to understand that this is affecting a lot of men. I think it's also important to always, always, always keep at the front of your mind that this is not a coherent worldview, which is part of why I try to poke holes in it frequently. Ultimately, it can't be a coherent worldview because there is no actual master plan. I've asked this frequently, like, what do you want women, if a woman is over 30 or like, God forbid, has also done OnlyFans, if she is the worst possible woman, what do you want from her? And the answer is nothing. The answer is she's to be made an example of for younger women. And she should spend her life self-immolating and just mea culpa,
yeah,
and just to younger women, like to serve as an example that they should live better lives. I'm sorry, but if your entire purpose here on earth is to be crucified for younger women, one, what was Christ doing up there?
Exactly.
But two, that's not a coherent worldview. It's also not stable, which is why I post a lot of like the marriage statistics and whatnot, is you can't have this idea of every man should sleep around till he's 40, create this like underclass of women who will be cast aside later. We'll get to that later. We're not really going to deal with them. It just kind of like they dissolve into the ether, and then marry 18, 19-year-old women and have lots and lots of babies with them. Like that doesn't actually work on a societal basis. And I think you can test the validity of ideas by whether or not they can actually scale. Christianity scales quite nicely. It doesn't mean that it's going perfectly because we're in a fallen world.
Exactly.
And like, I hate the term, like we don't win down here, but in some ways that's true. Like we're never going to just walk the straight and narrow perfectly before the second coming.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think that it does offer a coherent plan, though we may fall short of it. The red pill just doesn't. It kind of gives people a strategy for charging into battle with zero plan or vision for when the battle is won. And what I think is beautiful about Christianity is that it's as much about fighting the battle as it is understanding that the battle will be won and has been won. Whereas red pill, they mostly see it as a lost battle. And I really just don't think that you can have it both ways. So I do think it's careful, or it's important to be careful to take it seriously and recognize that like there's a lot of men that you meet out there who are kind of behind these anon accounts. Not that there's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being anon, but like it probably does mess with some of our brains because we don't realize how many of our coworkers and family and friends are sucked into this world. And it's like really eating away at their idea of love and their, you know, concept for the rest of their lives. But I don't think we should take it that seriously. And we should treat it as what it is, which is a massive cope, for lack of a better term. And ultimately kind of the projection of a lot of really, really depressed people hoping for some control. And they think that if they have this strategy or this praxeology, that will grant them that control.
That is so true. And so beautifully said. Do you think the church can do anything to effectively address the issues that the red pill movement seeks to highlight?
I think a lot of men feel like they're lacking agency in a lot of different ways. I think that, and this is one critique that I is well taken with, especially a lot of, I'd say like liturgically low, like you know, New Age churches. Mm-hmm. They get into a lot of like the really comforting Christianity, which I think is really helpful for a lot of women and not as helpful for a lot of men. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's untrue. I mean, some of the Jesus is my boyfriend stuff goes a little far where you're like, that's not what we mean by personal relationship with Christ, but all right.
He's your father. That feels a little incestuous.
Yeah, that's weird. We should know him personally, but like, I don't know. I love the idea of like going to a coffee shop and doing quiet time, but like, do we have to call it a date with Jesus? Like, I'm getting a little weirded out here. Yeah. But I don't know. I think that a lot of the messaging has started nailing it for women, which, you know, women are actually going to church less than men nowadays, or at least young women are, which I think we forget being online because it's all like male trad posters. But I think churches can be a little bit more, quite a bit more straightforward with like, okay, yes, God is sovereign. But also here's what you're called to do. And here's where you can lead, and here's where you can take charge of your own life. And you do have agency to affect your surroundings. I think that, and this is not exclusive to Red Pill whatsoever, but I think a lot of young people are kind of overwhelmed by a lot of different messages of just complete powerlessness. You get it with the climate anxiety stuff. Mm-hmm. You get it with the Red Pill. You get it with feminism of like, there are structures completely beyond my control that are ruining my life and there's nothing I can do about it. And we hear that over and over and over. And I think that the message of Christianity is a wonderful one for men, which is, yes, sin is here. God has won. And also you're on God's side. So like, you've been saved. And there's a lot that you can do down here and that you're called to do down here, other than sit and whine and lament the fact that sin exists. So I think that what that kind of looks like in practice often is giving men different types of leadership roles. A lot of like layman's roles are fantastic, I think, for men feeling like they have a stake in the church. I think that like the old meme of, you know, church guys carrying around chairs.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome. Like, I think that's what a lot of men like doing, is feeling like they have a stake in the church and they are actually helping out. I also think that churches probably should be doing a lot more for singles than they are. And I don't mean like super cringy matchmaking things. I literally just mean places to meet people. It doesn't have to be a date night where you wear a stupid color wristband or something. If you want to do that, whatever. Young Catholic Professionals is an awesome group for this. I believe that there are offshoots of that sort of thing all over the place. YCP, at least when I was in Boston, did this like freaking clockwork. Where it was just pretty chill, like low commitment events that you could go to, even if you weren't sure if you wanted to meet somebody, it's fine, but they were just genuinely social events, which I think is what a lot of young people are missing.
Yes.
You hear all of these stats coming from dating apps because everybody's on the dating apps because there's very few other places to meet people. Like, I think churches have a huge role to play in that.
Absolutely. Like, we used to grow up, you know, with there being third places. There wasn't just home and school. There wasn't just home and work. There wasn't just home and, like, you know, like, there was a third place. And I think that that's what made some of the places my husband's worked at in the past really, really beautiful, because there was that community there, because it was very third place coded. But they're just very, very disappearing, especially after, you know, the panini and everything.
Yeah. No, definitely. I don't know. At the same time, like, that's kind of I the way that I hear some people talk about the lack of third places is similarly like this lack of agency kind of framing of this is what they stole from you. And while I find that to be a hilarious meme when they're like, you know, throwing up an old photo of like McDonald's play places or something, like, the secret to third places is just going to them.
Like, yes, I just moved
to Ohio. I know no one here. I didn't have any existing friends. I just started going places. I've met so many people in 2.5 weeks, some of which I've had follow-up like coffees and ice creams and whatever with. Like, third places exist if you go to them. There are people going to them. I think a lot of times you have to embrace intergenerational community. Like, not everyone is going to be exactly your age, have exactly your political affiliations, and that's great. They're not going to have the exact education level you have, for better or for worse. That's also great. But like, I think what people miss about third places is that other people don't do it for you. You can also just throw this together. If you have two friends and those friends each have two friends, boom, you got a whole lot of friends, go do a picnic. Boom.
Exactly.
Like, I think that this waiting for community to happen just isn't how people have ever operated. And it's not going to fix anything.
No.
Like to wait for other people to throw events for us.
Exactly. If you want to be someone who has friends at Thursday parties, you have to go out and throw them first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I mean, that's a random example because I wanted to have a friend that threw tea parties, and she actually did with like a full Jane Austen theme and a chocolate fountain and marshmallows.
Amazing.
But bacon, not so much, in case you were curious. I was like 10, so.
Worth a shot.
Yes, meet your wife at an actual location, not on a screen. Reject dating apps, embrace courting. No way to get catfish there. Yes, true. My husband.
No, that's also very true. I think, I mean, meeting in person, like, it gets over a lot of the issues of dating apps. I mean, from the courting to the, oh my goodness, like, didn't realize their voice sounded this horrible in person. People talk a lot about pheromones. From what I understand, that's not actually a thing. Like, people don't have pheromone receptors. So, like, but I mean, your smell still matters to people. I think a lot of what people are missing is just like people. I sound so hippie, but like their vibes. I mean,
yes,
you can meet
absolutely.
Somebody and in like a minute, I mean, I used to be on the apps a while ago, and it would be like, I'd get to a date and within a minute we would both know this is going nowhere. We would both know like, okay, we're just not each other's like vibe.
And exactly.
You can't even put your finger on that. But when you meet in person, you warm up to each other a lot easier. There's so much less pressure. If you're in just kind of a group at church or you're I ran a lot of hiking groups in DC. Hiking with somebody for 10 hours is a fantastic way to figure out whether or not you like them without the awkwardness of like, oh, I went on a date with that person. No, you went on a hike with that person. And at the end you can go, hey, can I get your number for something? And that's a much easier way to do it. I think hikes are a fantastic, very free way, to kind of get these groups together. I don't know.
That's
at the same time,
friends
like,
too, like all the time.
Yeah.
They're like, how do I like, what do I, I'm like, honestly, Kyle and I, he's my best friend. He's my person. He's my husband. He's my provider, my protector, my literally everything outside of God. Cause you know, still like, obviously, but, like, he's my everything. And we were best friends first. Like, we met. There was absolutely some there. But we got to know each other as friends. And we really built that strong foundation. And because we had that strong foundation, anytime life happened, it was easier because we knew that we were partners that were waking up every day choosing each other and making life easier and better and serving each other.
Yeah.
And so I tell my girls, you know, if you want to get to know a guy better, be friends with him first because it takes the pressure off. You can actually see what you're getting. And this goes for my guy friends, who I would tell them, you know, be friends first, because if there's somebody worth knowing, they're also somebody worth having as a friend.
Yeah. Where I will say that I think guys and girls see this very differently.
Yes.
Is I think women genuinely often view it as like, just chilling with somebody and actually being friends. I think a lot of guys are like, somebody explained male and female sexuality to me as like men see it as a 100-meter sprint, women see it as a jungle gym. And they were specifically, I think, referring to like physical things of like men see a goal at the end, women don't necessarily. But I think it happens also with like, oh, just be friends. I think women often are like, we could be friends and then maybe not, or like we stay friends. And men are like, cool, friends first, dating second, married third, blah, blah, blah. And men are like much more goal oriented to the degree that I think if they see a woman that they genuinely really like, oftentimes they are completely incapable of being friends first.
Yes.
And I will often tell a lot of my guy friends like, okay, then like, don't fake it. You're not like, because then you're setting yourself up to be friend zoned.
Yes.
I like to say that the friend zone doesn't really exist because it's just you being too afraid to ask. Because if you kind of already say that you're in the friend zone, what you're admitting is that you either haven't asked yet and you just decided that you're in the friend zone, and as far as she's concerned, you're friends, or you have asked and you got rejected and you're not in the friend zone, you got rejected. It's not like this secret third option, but you either have asked or you haven't, and it's very, very binary. And sure, there's the, okay, like she said, not yet, or she's leading me on. I really wouldn't call that the friend zone at that point. I mean, that's just like you guys being crappy to one another, and you need to respect yourself enough to leave. Same deal with situationships. This whole idea of like, we're kind of dating, but we're kind of not, but we're feeling it out. It's like, is that what you actually want to do? Because otherwise, like, you as the woman know you shouldn't be asking him to date you necessarily, but like, you can absolutely say, oh, I will be exclusive if you'd like to be, but currently we're not. And we can be once you say we are, but my default is not that I'm, you know, exclusive to someone who doesn't show me that.
And it's so true, because I think that's where kind of Carrie went so wrong with Big. And just as, you know, returning to the earlier example, because of the fact that when you have something along those lines, you'll still always have the awkward tension and the resentment that builds up from not knowing where you are and having that like some type of firm footing with each other. And because of that, you'll end up treating each other in a less than ideal way, a less than ideal way that both of you deserve to be treated. And it'll cause problems. And then you'll go and maybe you'll have a relationship. Maybe it'll make it out of a, you know, parking lot. I mean, not parking lot, like whatever, you know what I'm trying to say.
For sure.
Words. like maybe it'll like make it out of the gate, but okay, once you're there, how much further can you go if you are carrying all of this relationship baggage with you because of what you did to each other? It'll still always be there.
That's also true. So, I mean, I think like I definitely encourage people to just be friends with the opposite sex, especially if you're completely unsure about somebody. But I also think that like a lot of people would probably be well suited to like just give it a shot.
Yeah.
You can also be friends later. I mean, I think the beauty of saving sex for marriage and like not letting it blow up dating into more than it needs to be, with people getting attached and feeling very serious, or God forbid, worse consequences. Lots of people getting diseases nowadays, which is terrifying. I think like if it's just a coffee chat, you can 100% stay friends. You can have a coffee chat and say, hey, I'd like to get to know you more. I've done that with guys from church, and you go afterwards, all right, you're cool. And neither of us really likes each other. And it didn't feel like we couldn't still just go immediately back to being friends, because like no one built it up into a big thing. We had coffee. Call it a date if you want. I would call it a date, I guess. But like, it's not, nobody slept with one another. Nobody, you know, gave each other anything icky. I mean, I think that there's a lot of, it's kind of seen as like stupid or childish to be abstinent like that. But there's a huge level of maturity in having that control over yourself and your drive, and ultimately like your future with the other person.
That's so true. And I have so much respect for my friends who, you know, they're my age and it just hasn't worked out with somebody yet. Yeah. And because of that, they're virgins. Like, I have so much respect for that. Like, it takes a lot of self-control. Like, I mean, I know I did it for decades, literally, before I met, you know, my husband. And it's one of those things that it has a lot of self-respect and it has a lot of peer group respect if you're in the right peer group.
Yeah. No, definitely. Which is why, I don't know. I really don't like seeing incel kind of thrown around as this dunk on people. But ultimately, I mean, the in part of incel is that it is involuntary. And so I think there's like a very fundamental difference between someone who is like voluntarily celibate and saving themselves in some way, or at least abstaining outside of marriage. There's a very, very big difference between that and someone who is inconvenienced by that. And they would if they could. Absolutely. I don't know. I think that we should be, you know, pro virginity, et cetera. But like this idea that you have won something or that you are more virtuous just because you're incapable of doing something has never made a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I can't make that math either, if I'm being 1,000% honest. It's, yeah. And I think what it kind of comes back to, right, is agency. Like, this is your life. You're making your own choices. You're making, you know, you're either making things happen or, not unfortunate, but you know what I mean? Like, either that, like, you're in the driver's seat of your own life or you're not. And that's kind of what it comes down to. And having that agency and knowing your boundaries, knowing your values is hugely crucial, both in maturing as a person and getting along with the opposite sex and managing the, you know, dating game.
Yeah.
Now, this has been an absolutely phenomenal discussion. Thank you so much. I always enjoy spending time with you. I do know that we do have a couple Twitter questions and then we'll wrap things up. So let's get to those. Thank you. Also, if you guys have not yet, please remember to like and subscribe. We just had a great conversation and we gave you that. And all we're asking is for you to hit a little button. It's a little button. It's free. Come on, do it. Thank you. Love you. Now let's check in on the app formerly known as Twitter. So one of the questions that we got here was from, what is the best way to get away from the red pill, black pill ideology movement on relationships and life itself? Actually, I just realized I can share this. I mean, I didn't just realize that. I always knew that, but I should.
The best way to get away from the red pill. I think my, I guess, understanding of it would be just surround yourself with people who are in good relationships. A lot of times these people are not going to be your own age, which I think is something that people kind of in this list, like high school, college mindset forget, is that it's okay to have friends that aren't your age, or at least like people that you hang out with. Older people in good relationships, those can be your pastor and his wife. Those can be like older couples in your church that you babysit for. I think seeing it work out, and especially seeing that it doesn't work out perfectly, is like, it makes a solid relationship feel a lot less far away when you realize that these people don't just have like something perfect that you don't have, that they don't make nowadays. You can make it nowadays and it's within your grasp.
Absolutely. I've had a lot of talks, you know, with some single friends recently too, that have been like, okay, so I always thought it was just a big difference between it's easier for some people and some people it's just it's not easier. And it's like, you know, when it's real, when it's happening, when it's two people committed to each other and deciding, you know, to work together instead of facing each other, like trying to like face off against each other, they're facing off together against a problem and overcoming it together and making that partnership stronger, that it really is helpful. And I've heard a lot of my friends say what a difference that's made seeing that up close. So one of the other questions here is,
current laws and court system is anti-men. Would you support efforts to change this so men's rights are better represented? I think it's a mixed bag. Like, it very much depends which laws we're talking about, frankly. I'm not going to say that there aren't. I don't even think it's necessarily the laws a lot of the time. I think it kind of tends to be the people implementing them. I don't think that there's like, I think to get to the core of the question, I don't think that there's like specific laws we can change and then we will have undone feminism. I think we could change whatever laws we want. And with the current people that we have, we would still have the same society that we have. If you honestly think that we are, for example, going by the spirit of the Second Amendment with our current gun laws, like, I'm sorry, I think you're insane. The fact of the matter is that the laws don't really have that much of an impact over the way that a lot of societies run, in my opinion. And that is certainly the case for things that are as social as the relations between sexes, which by and large are not really driven by the legal system, I don't think. I mean, maybe divorce, but if you're I don't buy the idea that like women have a huge incentive to divorce. They have a negative incentive to divorce because they exactly. tend to be worse off than men afterwards. Exactly. I don't know. I certainly think that there are things that we can and should fix with things like family court. But the idea that we're just going to like go down a platform of like red pill laws to change. I don't know. Yeah. I think that it's a little bit of a stretch.
It doesn't like it. The way that like the laws are written and everything, there's not necessarily a clean cut way of doing that, especially when, you know, you take into consideration, especially like in family court too, because I've known a lot of people who have unfortunately had to go through the family court system and know it on, you know, both sides, being, you know, friends either with mom or with the dad or, you know, however it works out. And it's not just the way the law works out. It's also the way the judge like rules on things and what evidence is presented. And there's so many moving parts, and a lot of them aren't just very black and white.
I think a lot of people think it's like an algorithm and you can just kind of like recalibrate it a little bit. It's not avoiding, or it's not like auto awarding X points to women or whatever. There's some states that are really good for men, really bad for women. And it's not usually the laws that are the X factor. I don't know. I grew up in New York State. I was in the family court system for over 20 years. And it was a total mixed bag based on which judge we got, even like through my childhood. But I don't know, I guess I would say meh. It'd be pro premarital kissing, hugging, cuddling. Yeah. I mean, prudence is key, but like, I don't know, man, I don't see anything in the Bible against kissing and hugging.
Yeah.
There's some legalistic bros, I'm sure, who are kind of oblivion, so whatever.
I unfortunately know a couple that when they got married, they gave each other a handshake instead of kissing.
That could be just like feeling really weird about it in front of your parents. I don't know if I've ever kissed anyone in front of my parents. I definitely have not. And I think that will be a weird... I'll be like, all right, we're just gonna sneak one behind the hands, but I don't know.
Yeah. Another one of the questions too is kind of on that same topic. Are you single?
I am not. I am with a lovely man. We've been dating about a year now. And he is why I moved out to Ohio, to be closer to him and closer to his family. And he is wonderful. We met on a political philosophy fellowship, so kind of nerding out about similar things. We knew each other kind of through the fellowship for probably 6 months, just, I won't say as friends, like it was through the fellowship, so it was kind of fairly professional. And then kind of after the fellowship was over, actually ended up realizing it was something more. So. He is lovely and very grateful to that for bringing us together.
That's wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Sorry, boys, but it seems like there's one that already got there and I'm rooting for you guys. That's so wonderful. And then... Sorry, yeah, that's why I didn't write that one down. Not all of them are winners, but I do appreciate when people do submit them. So thank you guys so much for submitting your wonderful questions, some of your interesting questions, and for our girlies that we have in common who submitted some really great talking points about this specific topic. Is there anything that you'd like to leave our audience with?
I think just in general, like, don't lose hope. Ultimately, I think if we're trying to put our hope in anything other than Christ, it is very flimsy. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And there's a lot of that to be had in our relationships, whether romantic, platonic, or otherwise.
Another... Guys, stop it. Sorry, my husband's like, so, when you get married? And the guys are like, so, when you get married?
We're working on it. Stay tuned, though. So,
congratulations. I was like, I'm not.
Yes, buddy bud. We got some donuts. It's donut time. It's treat time.
Yeah. And as y'all love, it is snack time. So this is Jazz, for those of you who don't know. And he does the quench. Yes, don't worry. We got a couple. Bud, you have fur on your nose.
Sure, buddy.
There you go, Bubba. And we say, hey, I taught you your manners. You use your manners. You go, thank you for the donuts. We appreciate you. Nice to meet you, Eddie.
There you go, Bud.
Oh gosh, no, I have his no, I have his fur on my face. That's always a risk when I wear lip gloss.
I get that with my dog. I'm like, ah.
Jonah is so cute. I'm obsessed. Like,
he's very, very sweet. He has not eaten yet, so he's gonna be happy when I go out there.
Well, that is wonderful. Thank you so much for being on. Would you like to close with prayer?
If you'd like to leave. Or are you?
Would you like to say the prayer, or do you want me to?
Go for it.
Okay. Since this was an Anglican episode, I figured why not? I have it bookmarked right here. But the cool thing about the Book of Common Prayer is that there's actually multiple bookmarks. So sometimes it's a little hard to lose your, like, it's easy to keep your places, but it's also a little bit tricky to, like, find the exact one. So I know since today's been a bit of a tricky Tuesday, let's do a collect for guidance. Heavenly Father, in you we live and move and have our being. We humbly pray you so to guide and govern us by your Holy Spirit, that in all the cares and occupations of our life we may not forget you, but may remember that we are ever walking in your sight through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
May each of us go forth this week, boldly be able to share the hope that we have in our hearts and in our lives, and use the best discernment that we can so that we may stay based and stay blessed. Love y'all. Bye. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly do me a favor and leave me a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. My podcast is available wherever you can listen, and it's also available live on Rumble on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern. I hope you can join us in whatever format works best for you. Please tell somebody that you care about this episode so that I can spread my work and encourage more people. And remember, stay based and stay blessed.